Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, October 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we taste and discuss some fall favorites, apples and cider. And we welcome Al Sachs of the Franklin County Cider Days and Steve Gudgeon of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Massachusetts. The 25th annual Cider Days are being held from November 1st to 3rd. Bear Swamp is a family-run certified organic orchard and distillery that offers a range of apple products. If you got a question about apples or cider or both, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Apples, cider, your calls coming up on Vox Pop Food Friday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we discuss staples of the autumn in the Northeast, apples and cider. Joining us in the studio are Al Sachs of Franklin County Cider Days and Steve Gudgeon of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Massachusetts. 25th annual Cider Days run from November 1st to the 3rd. Bear Swamp is a family-run, certified organic orchard and distillery that offers a range of apple products. If you have a question about apples and or cider, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But that number, very important number, write it on your wall, 800-348-2551. Al Sachs, Steve Gudgeon, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us. Yeah. We're overjoyed to be here.
I almost said welcome back, but that would only be half right. Al, you've been on the show before.
I have. We've talked cider and apples before.
And I like it. Steve Gudgeon, you're a newcomer, right?
I am. First time here.
You're standing up.
I am standing up.
Do you like that or do you want a chair?
Well, you know, we have a lot of product in front of us to taste, and I got to be able to pass it around.
Well, let it be known that Steve Gudgeon is a real pro, and he's standing up for the entire program. If you need a break at any point, just sit down, relax. All right, before we get to Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery, which I want to hear a lot about, let's talk about the Cider Days. Now, you were on, and we talked about Cider Days last year, right?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. This is the 25th, and it's a big deal, Al.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes, it's a... It is our 25th anniversary, and we are the longest-running artisanal cider festival in North America.
Now, how do you know that? Have you done a records check exhaustively?
We have done the research. We have done the research.
Really?
Exhausting.
And it is. We've been spending years on it. But but we really started the artisanal cider movement in the United States, and we brought some ciders here from some of those cideries that were the founding cideries in this movement.
Really?
Yeah. And so we're going to get into that. But for 3 days we have Cider Madness in Franklin County, where we have events all over the county. It's not just one little place. It's at orchards and it's in different towns.
So you don't get a big tent and get everybody together.
Well, we do that when we do the tasting. We have a tasting where we have we're having 52 different producers are coming in, and we're going to have over 153 varieties of cider to taste.
Wow.
That's going to happen in Turner's Falls on Saturday afternoon. There are two different sessions down there.
Now, this starts on November 1st, which is what day of the week? That's a Saturday?
That's a Friday.
That's a Friday.
Yeah, really, there's actually a couple things happening on Thursday. There's a New England cider tour that you can go on if you wanted to actually go up and visit some of the cideries up in Vermont and New Hampshire. And that you can look that up at totallycider.com and find out the information about that. There's also in Asheville Town Hall, there's going to be a wild apple exhibition showing all sorts of crazy wild apples.
What do you mean crazy?
I mean, apples come in all different sizes. And when you go in the grocery store, you see them pretty much like what we would describe as dessert apples.
Yeah.
Okay. The ones you eat out of hand, the ones your mom packed in your lunch.
Right.
And you threw it your...
My mom usually gave me Twinkies, but that's another story.
Your mom was a better mom than some,
yeah,
I guess.
But no, I mean, apples are good too, right?
And so these, but these are, the apples come in, they're just very, very varied. And so cider makers are particularly excited about the wild and the little guys, the ones that taste different. And we have some apples here that you can taste to get
that
experience.
This is exciting. Now, we'll do the tasting in a minute, but I just want to kind of get a rundown, a sense of the 3 days that is the Cider Day's 25th anniversary.
The Pomological Exposition is pretty much for apple hunting nerds who like to go out and collect wild apples.
Okay. Okay.
And then Friday night, what we're going to do is we're going to have a Calvados and apple brandy tasting.
Oh.
That's a ticketed event, but there's a few tickets left there. Okay. And there's going to be a sing at the Episcopal Church Hall, a cider sing. It's a pop-up cider pub, and that's a BYOC. It's kind of a bring-your-own thing, and we sit around just like in a pub instead of singing about—
In a church. And the elders of the church are okay with the—
This is an Episcopal church.
Okay. Fair enough. Noted.
They are. And we are going to, we sing together, and then we'll have a session, and people will hang out and taste each other's cider.
This is exciting.
And then on Saturday, we have an incredible lineup of speakers coming in. We have people, one of the best cider makers in England, Tom Oliver, is coming in, and he's going to talk about the work that he's done. He's going to be speaking up in Shelburne Falls. We have a number of different venues in Shelburne Falls, and he's going to be talking with Ryan Burke from Angry Orchard, and also one of the women who does Wrangletown ciders out on the West Coast, and they're going to be sitting down. We have we're going to be talking about Sizer. We're going to be talking about people who've gone to the birthplace of apples in Kazakhstan. Not Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan.
Is it Kazakhstan?
Yeah. Birthplace of apples?
Yeah.
Now what
Asia.
Research did we do on this?
Okay, well, actually, this is a long story.
We only have 40 minutes.
I know.
45
minutes. We'll try to keep it, keep it short.
Cliff Notes version, please.
There are wild apple orchards out there which people have scientists have determined, this is where apples came from. And they were carried out through the Silk Road through the Middle East, to Spain, up into France, into England, and then from there, the apples that we usually make in a cider came across with the Europeans over into North America.
This?
So we're talking like wild apple forests. So it's not like orchards. We're talking entire regions.
Mountain ranges,
entire regions that are just apple trees.
Wow.
And this is in the stands. You know where Afghanistan is? Go north.
Mm.
So it's up in that area.
And are any of those varieties, the ancient ones, still around today?
Oh yeah, they are. And they're the genetic forefathers and foremothers of the apples that we're eating today. There also are wild apples that are indigenous to the United States, but they're very small and very very inedible.
Yeah. Al Sachs, when the heck did you become a maniac about apples? At what point in your life did you say, Mom, geez, I'm really into apples?
Well, I think what happened was that when I was a kid, I had to climb up in the apple trees and cut suckers off.
Yeah.
And then I would wander around in the fall and eat apples off the trees. And I loved to. And when I was a kid in the Boy Scouts, we used to go gather apples and press cider and sell it.
Yeah.
That's how we paid for our camping trips.
Did Boy Scouts make the hard cider too?
Well,
no?
You had to kind of learn that on your own.
Over in the
back.
There
wasn't the merit badge on hard cider making. But I think I probably earned it by now.
Well, that's pretty great. So we have been through Friday. There's really a pre-event Thursday. Friday, we have done Saturday, and then it goes to Sunday?
Yeah, Saturday goes. We have speakers in a number of different towns. The tasting's on Saturday. And then on Sunday, again, there's more speakers. There's more workshops. They're going to be in Deerfield and in Shelburne Falls, as well as the orchards are all open at this time. So people can go out and visit the orchards and see the cider press, pick their own apples, take wagon tours down. So it's not just for people who like to imbibe. It's family friendly too.
But some people like to imbibe.
Some do. Yes, yeah. We noticed a few.
I noticed that. I do. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's apples. It's cider today. Al Sachs of Franklin County Cider Days and Steve Gudgeon, who we've barely heard from yet, from Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Massachusetts. We'll talk to Steve at length about the cidery and distillery and the orchard coming up. We'll also take a few calls. But let's take a break first. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop Food Friday at Stone Soul Picnic here on the program. Al Sachs from Franklin County Cider Days is with us. Steve Gudgeon of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Mass. If you have a question about apples and or cider, the number is 800-348-2551. Steve Gudgeon, you know, we monopolized the first segment of the program because Al's a talker. He likes to talk about the Cider Days. And we'll do it again. Al, just relax. We'll get back to this. But let's find a little bit about Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Massachusetts. How long have you guys been around?
So we've been around since 2006, and we started with an old kind of abandoned orchard that was behind some property that I grew up on.
Yeah.
And my wife and I moved back to the area. I was always a home brewer and hard cider maker.
Yeah.
And so we looked at it as basically just kind of a free source of booze behind my house.
Oh, nothing wrong.
No. So what we did was we started managing it a little bit. We are always gardeners, but never really thought seriously about having an orchard. Also, we had people who wanted to come in, maybe pick some apples. And then it was friends of friends who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, I'm here with this hobby that's completely out of control.
How many trees now?
So we don't measure by trees. It's usually by acreage. So we're very small for a commercial orchard. We're only about 7 acres.
That's enough.
Yep, it's enough. It keeps you busy. But it's what we mostly do is we produce things with the apples. So we offer a little bit of pick your own. So
right.
People come into the orchard and can pick in the fall. But we also have a tasting room for our hard ciders and for our apple brandies and stuff right at the farm.
I love the fact that you make apple brandy. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's talk. We'll do an apple tasting and then we'll do tasting of some of the beverages. Let's take a call or two because some folks have been waiting a while here. Let's go to Dave in Del Mar. Dave, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah, okay, I can't hear you too well. Where can I find a place to buy apple cider that I can harden?
Well, actually, Franklin County Cider Days has an amazing opportunity for that because not all apple juice is created equal as far as it being good for hard cider production.
Interesting. Now, what makes a cider A better than cider B?
So it's the same
hardening
thing. If anybody's ever had an opportunity to go to and taste wine grapes versus eating grapes, very different characteristics. Sometimes the wine grapes are generally going to have a lot higher sugar content, which basically equals higher alcohol.
Yeah.
But they also have a lot of tannins and other acids and stuff in them that make them kind of not inedible, but unpleasant to eat compared to a table grape. And basically the hard cider world, it's the same thing. You have hard cider apples, which are very different, and have different characteristics from your eating apples. And we could go through that when we taste apples.
We'll definitely do that.
So get back to your question.
Well, Dave's not near Franklin County, but just give him a pointer as to what he would look for a cider that he can harden.
Well, the cool thing is to call some of your orchards, call local orchards, as a lot of them are starting to do this kind of thing. What you want is something that's going to be not kind of really sweet and acidic, almost that tanginess that you get. You want something that's going to be almost what we call very dry. You think about a dry wine.
Yeah.
It's going to have this drying effect on your tongue and the roof of your mouth. And you can get that same characteristic from a fresh juice. Pine Hill Orchard, which is in Western Mass and part of the Franklin County Cider Days, they do a big event where they press 3,000 gallons of hard cider-specific juice.
Ah.
And then people, home fermenters, can come in and fill up their carboys or tanks and take it home.
Now, for those who are in far-flung regions, and we cover 7 states up to the Canadian border, are we looking for Gala? What, in other words, in general, what would you look for if, say, I want to make a batch of hard cider?
You're going to want to know the kind of apples that went into it.
Right.
It's really about that.
Mike Six, Zach.
I think that's the whole question is how do you blend the apples to make the best cider? And, you know, you can actually use any kind of cider that you can get your hands on and make a passable cider.
Yeah.
But if you want to make a really good cider, you want to have some different apples in there so there's some depth. You want some bitters. You want some sharp apples. You want not just the dessert apples that you usually get. So one of the ways I've done this sometimes in the past is I've taken a bunch of crab apples, thrown them in the blender, and when I'm fermenting, say I get a couple just regular orchard run, I don't know what kind of apples they are in the juice, in my primary fermenter, I throw some of those busted up, those blended up crab apples that
for bitterness?
And it gives you some bitterness and some sharpness.
Wow, man.
It's spicing.
We have a tree full of crab apples that the deer ate it all. I should have known. I should have grabbed some. Let's zip over to line 2 and Ramona in Bennington. Ramona.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I wanted to know about an apple that I ate about 12 years ago. I was in upstate New York at a farmer's market that only sold apples, and I bought apples randomly, and I got these apples that had red veins going through them.
Yeah.
And it was very crunchy and very delicious. And I don't know the name of the apple. I know that I spoke to some, it was a farmer's market, but they only sold apple. And I spoke to some of the people there, and some of them said they were from the mountains of Philadelphia. But I don't know what
Philadelphia has mountains.
There we go.
Well, I'll be darned.
Poconos.
The farmer's market was in New York, but right. I talked to some of the people there,
gotcha.
And they said that they mm-hmm.
Well, let's go over
but
to
I
our apple experts.
So, so the issue with identifying apples, I mean, there are a lot of apples out there that will have like a red skin that will sometimes bleed into the apple.
Yeah.
There are red fleshed apples like Redfield, this cider that we have right here is actually red.
It looks like a rosé.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a rosé, naturally red because of the kind of apples you use. If you were to cut open an apple.
It was white. Yeah, but this one was white, and it had, like, red veins going through it.
Could that have been some heirloom variety?
Yeah, it could have been, like, sops of wine.
Yeah. Or,
you know, there's a lot of different varieties that
even
have that.
We have one called William's Pride that does the same thing, that where the flesh will actually, the skin bleeds into the flesh. If you take and cut open any apple and look inside, you're going to see between 5 and 10 seeds. Let's just call it 5 seeds.
Right.
Each one of those seeds is a brand-new apple variety. They don't breed true to their parents.
Okay. Huh.
So that basically if you look at a tree and multiply all the apples on that tree times 5, that's how many potential new apple varieties are on there.
Fantastic.
The only way to get an apple variety is clonally by grafting. So you cut some piece off of that tree and move it. So if you think about all over the whole Northeast, there are, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, millions of apple varieties. Every time somebody throws an apple core out the window, lands on the side of the road, new tree pops up. This is these wild apples that Al was talking about earlier.
I'll be darned.
So those are all new apple varieties.
Well, Ramona, thank you very much for the call. That is very interesting because now those who fancy the wild apples,
right?
Every year is different.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's exciting genetically that's happening now is that there is a gentleman named Dr. Cameron Peace. He's coming in from Washington State, and he's doing the genetic mapping of the apples. And so he is at the process of almost coming up with something like a 23andMe genetic testing system for apples so that I could bring in my apple and you could say, oh, well, looks like this comes from, you know, Duchess of, you know, Goldenberg or wherever, you know, whatever it is. And its father was, you know,
Roxbury Russet
or something of that sort. But you're going to be able to, in the future, if we get the research money for this gentleman, we're going to be able to see, like, the real genetic heritage of these apples.
Why would I want to know that?
Because I think it's another way of you understanding what the apple is, especially if you're looking to blend it into cider, and you'll be able to instead of when you find a wild apple, instead of trying to grow this tree out and taking years and years to grow this tree out, you can get a general sense about what this apple is, and then you can decide, all right, I want to grow a bunch of these trees because apples grow on trees, but trees take a long time to grow.
Right.
Another piece of this, I think it's just interesting culturally, just seeing how apples move to different places. And it's there's a whole historical angle to it, is how they moved around the whole planet.
Then we can assume the apples from Revolutionary War times, substantially different than what we eat today.
They're still around.
Well, how do you know?
Roxbury.
I thought they changed it with every seed.
Roxbury russet.
Because,
this one's not very russeted because they vary year to year, but this is a Roxbury russet, which is kind of recognized as being one of the older that we still have in cultivation apple varieties from Roxbury, Massachusetts, going back to 16-something, you know, mid-1600s, I think, when this kind of first came into writings. But it's still around today, and we're cultivating it.
So the way it works is that you don't grow apples from seeds. You've got to take a live cutting off the tree and plug it onto a rootstock,
right?
Or use other types of clonals. So actually, what you're seeing here is these apples are all from one seedling. All of the every Honeycrisp you see out there, every Golden Delicious you see out there, they all come from that.
And this knowledge has been passed down since thousands of years,
thousands,
hundreds of years.
Thousands of years.
Okay.
I mean, that's how apples travel.
Yep. And so with these, the cool thing about with all these seedling apples, like this is a crab apple.
Yeah.
That I found, and it turns out it has really high sugars, almost as high sugars in this as you might have in a wine grape.
Hmm.
You know, I found it and I've grafted it into trees in my orchard now. I found it just out in a hillside someplace. And so, you know, we get to name it and propagate it and share it with other
people. What's the
name? That one, row crab.
So
row crab.
So you wouldn't really have apples the way we know them without people selecting them and passing them on.
Yeah.
You just really wouldn't.
Apples are a people thing.
They are a people thing.
Let's take two more calls and then let's let the tasting begin here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike in South Hadley. Mike, you're on.
Hey, this is Mike from Stony Brook Cider. I just wanted to give a shout out to Steve. and also a shout out to Franklin County Cider Days, which got me my start in my business.
We've heard that story a lot.
That's great, Mike. You going to be there?
I am going to be there. About 6 years ago, I won a blue ribbon there, and my wife said, "Okay, stop screwing around, and let's get going."
So you got the blue ribbon just by doing this for fun. Wow, good for you,
man.
Yeah,
we have an amateur competition as part of Cider Days.
Yeah,
and we find that many people who win have wives that tell them to quit screwing around and start making cider.
Yeah. the first part of that sentence applies to most of us.
Or husbands, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Our husband,
that's
a lot
true.
Of women in
There's
the cider
a lot
industry.
Of women, that's true.
All right, Mike. Well, hey, good. Congratulations on that. And how are things going with Owens, the Stony Brook cider?
Well, I've been in business legally for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I've doubled sales every year.
Hey, congratulations. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. It's apples and cider today on Food Friday. Al Sachs of Franklin County Cider Days. Steve Gudgeon of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery and Distillery in Asheville, Massachusetts. We'll take one more call here, and you guys don't need to whisper. We hear it anyway. You can go ahead and just...
We're trying to figure out what we're going to drink first. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're going to taste some apples first,
taste.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's go to Elizabeth in the Hudson Valley. Elizabeth.
Hey, guys. It's Elizabeth Ryan, another grower and cider maker,
nice.
Hudson Valley Farmhouse Cider. And I just also wanted to give a shout out. Mike kind of preempted me, but I want to really encourage people to go to this event, which I happen to think is one of the most unique in the country. It's very decentralized, and there are so many events going on. It's such a rich experience, not just to be at individual cider houses and meet the growers, but to drive around. And I just, if there's any tickets left, I just want to put in a plug for these tastings. And I don't even pour half the time. I just come for the joy of it, seriously. Sometimes we do, but I want to experience every little bit of it. And I believe it's largely a volunteer effort. So to me, I think it's one of the most remarkable events in the country.
Well,
and it is just a shining example of what a community can do to support their farmers and cider makers.
That was very
so
nice.
Bravo.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
And Elizabeth is spot on. It is a very much of a volunteer-driven event. And those of us who are involved in it work on it literally 12 months a year to make this happen, because once we've got it, once we finish one, we evaluate, talk about what we're going to do next year, and start planning.
You know, Elizabeth mentioned the decentralization, and you mentioned this too, Al, that it's all over the place. Can that be a drawback? In other words, people go to an event like this, don't they want everything to be in one spot?
You know, the thing is that you can't do everything. There's no way you can do everything because there's so many things going on. So people have to pick their pleasure.
Yeah.
And it's good that way because, you know, there's some people who are going to do nothing but visit cideries and orchards.
Right.
And other people who really want to get into the nuts and bolts of it and the technical details. And then there's some people who just want to drink the cider.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of pick your path.
Yeah, you don't have to drink alcohol or be interested in brandy and hard cider. There's tons of stuff going on with apple pressing demonstrations, apple tastings, all these things, and a lot of cooking demonstrations, pairings. So there's there's a lot of stuff you can do.
All right, while we were taking calls, Steve Goodgen, you cut a slice of an apple here, and it's beautiful. It's a nice little. What is this?
This is another classic New England apple. So we're going to start with the eating apple. It's a Baldwin. So these are just barely coming in right now. These are a very late season apple. They have a little bit of tartness to them.
They
these
sure
actually
do.
Are going to develop a lot of flavor in storage. So this was a real multi-purpose apple, good for baking, good for just juicing, blending in hard cider. It's very nice. So this is kind of
not too sweet. I love the texture. Now, will that change as it sits?
Absolutely. It basically, what happens is it's a firm apple, and it will stay firm for months just in like a cold New England basement, kind of your old school basement.
Yeah.
But it's going to pop. And so it's going to basically keep those characteristics until, early spring.
That's delicious. But I could do a pie with this.
Absolutely. This is a great baking apple.
Great pie apple.
And I think that's kind of, the point with this apple is you can do everything with it if you have this in your orchard.
Are you handing me another one?
Yep.
Different one?
Yep. So what we have here is we're going in order towards kind of a better cider-making apples. So we're kind of moving away from just eating apples and going towards apples that you would just use for cider-making.
This is a little sweeter.
This right now is just a little bit riper. You can taste the extra sugars in this.
Yep.
So this is a much higher sugar content. This is called a golden russet. So again, another multi-purpose apple.
This was classically
known as a champagne of cider apples. Makes a really good single varietal hard cider.
Yeah.
Again, good baking apple, good drying apple. Mm. There's just a ton of stuff you can do with it.
Outstanding. All right, let's grab another call here, and then we'll move on to the next tasting. Let's go to Fred in Lake George. Fred, you're on.
So if I was interested in growing an apple tree from a seedling, how long does it take before you get apples on a young tree? And do you have any suggestions about where you go purchasing, young trees?
There are lots of lots of factors in this. With how long it takes for you to get fruit from an apple, it really depends on the rootstock. So apple trees are made up of, for the most part, production apple trees are made up of two pieces. You have the rootstock, which is the root that goes in the ground, and then your grafted variety that goes on top of that rootstock.
Yeah.
So the rootstock itself determines the overall size of it. If you go to a lot of orchards now, you're going to see apple trees that are actually grown on a trellis that look like a vineyard.
Yeah.
So they're actually on wires, as opposed to a seedling style, so a full-size apple tree, which could be 40, 50 feet tall. And then you have everything kind of in between there. A lot of our orchards, what we call kind of that mid-size, that 50, 60% of standard is usually the way people measure them.
Okay.
A standard tree, 8 to 10 years to come into production. One of those trellis trees, which take a lot of input and structure and stuff, maybe 2 to 3 years, depending on the apple variety.
But how much output can you get of something like that?
Well, I mean, the production per acre isn't going to be that much different, depending, again, on the variety. With any one of those systems, it's going to be a matter of how they're management, how easy they are to prune, spray, pick, all those factors.
But what if I was
many years before you're going to have apples if you plant one in your backyard?
Well, I mean, that would depend on the rootstock size. If you go to and get something that's going to be in that that 50% range, say like an M7 rootstock, they're all numbered and labeled. Whoa. That tree might take like 4 to 5 years before you'd see an apple on it.
Okay, what's M7 mean?
M7 has to do with a different universities, and that has to do with the Merton Malling system, which was a British system that they were developed rootstocks back around the turn of the last century.
Well, how does it compare to, say, an M5?
an M5. Well, I'm not sure there's even an M5, but
there's an MC5, but that's a great.
Oh, the MC5. All right, and there's an M5 motorway.
Well, if you're talking New York, you're talking what they call the Geneva rootstock series, which all come out of Cornell.
Yeah,
and all of those, they're going to have the whole size range too. And you pick something in the middle of their size range, it might be in that, say, 4 to 5 years, too. It's going to depend. As far as where you should go, you should really go to a local nursery that's growing stuff regionally, because you don't want to get trees from down south that are brought up here and
that
can't deal with our winters.
Yeah. All right.
Exactly.
All right. Last tasting here, then we'll take a break. 800-348-2551. Steve Goodgen, what do we have here?
What we have here, I believe, so we're in Newtown Pippin.
I love it.
Yeah. Very neat apple. Again, another multi-purpose apple. A lot of people use this specifically as just a just a cider apple.
It does taste like cider, right?
Yeah,
away.
And they use that from the Hudson. That's from the Hudson Valley in this area of New England, all the way down to Virginia. They actually call it Albemarle Pippin down in Virginia.
One of the things I love about a good apple is the skin, and I love the skin on this. It's
absolutely
perfect. Let's take a break here, Zach. 800-348-2551 is the number. We've had some apples. Let's have a little beverage, and we'll do that coming up on Food Friday. Yeah, a little Ronnie Huber on the Barry Sachs. To me, that sounds like apple picking music, right? Barry Sachs, 800-348-2551 is the number. Al Sachs is here from Franklin County Cider Days, and Steve Goodgen of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery in Ashfield, Massachusetts. 25th annual Cider Days run from November 1st to the 3rd, and we're going to take two more tastings here.
Real
of
quick.
Apples before we go to the beverages.
Because this is going to help you kind of pick out some of these flavors in the ciders by having these last two apples. These are cider-specific apples.
Okay, the yellow one is what?
A Chisel Jersey. It's a British apple, very
Chisel
British name.
Chisel Jersey, very nice name. Very different. My God.
So this has actually really high sugar. What you're getting in this is that drying, those drying tannins in there.
Bitter.
And so this is bitter.
It's got a bitter edge to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, like myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this one, you can, like I said, high sugars, but you're getting with those tannins in there and the bitterness, it's going to kind of lend its structure to the cider the way it does in wine.
Now let's talk about the levels here. Like we're talking about the core of the earth. Are the tannins, is the bitterness closer to the skin? That's what I'm getting as I'm biting it.
So that's interesting because this is one of those big things. The latest research on this says that basically all that goes through the entire fruit, unlike grapes where you supposedly get more of that closer to the skins.
Okay.
As opposed
my
to the
intuition
flesh of the
tells
fruit.
Me the bitterness is closer to the skin in that one.
Yeah, but if you were to cut this apple and just eat the flesh of it,
still
it's actually,
it.
Oh, it's full, okay. fully there.
All right, what's the red one?
Okay, this is another wild fruit from a friend of mine, John Bunker, who's an apple explorer well-known in Maine and the region, goes around and speaks, called Shavel Sharp.
Okay.
So this
he's
is
an apple explorer.
Yes.
He's an apple explorer.
Apple explorer.
Okay.
That's,
he's a hunter
all right.
of apples.
Well, oh, my God. I don't want to have I don't want to pick any.
I told you, this is the one I wanted to see your face when you tried it.
Thanks for that.
No problem. You're welcome.
Some people call these type of apples spitters because when you bite into them, even though they're dead ripe.
Ray's going for his napkin.
Could you tell me this before the show? Oh, we call this one the spitter. We call this one the puker.
Yeah.
No, this is
live radio. We got to experience the whole thing.
It's all right. I can deal with it.
Yeah.
I've had worse.
You can see, that's not an eater, though.
No.
But it has really good qualities that lends to cider. Again, those tannins, some of that acidity, and they kind of give structure to a cider that you wouldn't get from like a Macintosh, necessarily from a straight Macintosh juice or Fuji.
You know, I got a feeling that we should probably go to the beverages now to wash the taste out of that, out of my mouth. What do we have here?
What we have here is a West County cider, Redfield. And this is a single varietal cider. Now, most of the time, cider makers like to blend their apples to get up to a certain kind of flavor. This is strictly one kind of apple.
So like a single malt.
It's like a single malt, except it's one apple. And you notice the rosy color. That is because the genetics of this apple make the flesh red. When you bite into it, you look at it, you see that it's red. And so what we have in here is some of the Siberian crab apples have been blended into the genetics of this. And you get this red color. Now,
it's not sweet.
It's not sweet. It's a dry. Now, just like you don't expect wine to taste like grape juice, you don't expect cider to taste like apples. You expect it to taste like cider, which is going to be a beverage that's, you know.
This is a very refined taste. Oh, this is very nice. I mean, you could have this with a chicken or
absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Think about a nice fish dish with this.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. And It is really one of their West County tops.
What is the name of this?
This is called Redfield.
West Country County
West
Cider. Yeah, my glasses.
These are the people who started Cider Days 25 years ago. West County Cider.
Outstanding.
Outstanding.
It is beautiful.
It is a beautiful cider.
All right, what do you got there, Al? And then we'll go back to the phones. This one is it's like champagne. It's very nice.
So it's a totally different color.
Yep. So you have to look at this is from a friend of both of ours.
K-19, the Steely Dan reference. All right, there you go. Down with that.
I love Pete Mitchell from Headwater Cider in Holly, Mass, which is the next town over from where I live. He's making some really good ciders at this point. And so you notice with both these ciders, these are very much a wine style cider. So cider has a giant range on it as far as style wise, the same way that beers do.
Yeah.
So these are going to be both on your kind of drier, more wine like end of things.
And this is once again the name?
Hey 19
from Headwater Cider.
I mean, the nose and the drinkability, very different than the last one.
Very different.
It has
very
a pungent different. Nose to
yep.
it.
Yeah.
And it's rather dry and not. Not overpowering. It's nice. Very nice.
You could imagine sitting down with a little cheese and some crackers before dinner, or having this with dinner.
Or a big cheese, right? I could have this with pizza. I mean, this to me, no sweat.
It could stand up to a pizza.
All right, let's grab a call or two. 800-348-2551. Dennis in Albany. Dennis.
Hello. Hi. Thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Sure.
And what happened is in the 90s, I purchased the Erastus Corning Estate, and it was a gentleman's farm.
Ah.
And he had 800 acres at the time, and, well, the whole family. When I purchased it, he was no longer alive, but the youngsters were oldsters by that time, and they took me through the remains of the estate. And there's an orchard there of, they said, heritage trees. They had many vines growing in them. And so I cleared out all the vines a number of years ago, and they started producing apples. And they're quite old trees. So what we want to do is to see if we could preserve some of these. And you had mentioned grafting and so forth. So I'm wondering if you guys do that type of thing. You can even take some of the grafts and put them on your orchards if you want. Some of the apples are very tasty, but they said that each tree is a different variety, and like that. So, it's possible to do that.
It is possible to. I have a friend who specializes. We know a couple people who specialize in renovating old orchards. And what they will do is they will come in. They will look at your trees. They will cut out the dead wood. They will try to shape them into something that's productive. And if you have fruit from the tree, it'll help in identifying what the trees are. But they may be seedling trees themselves. My guess is that since this is an estate from Mr. Corning,
yep,
from Corning Glass.
Yeah,
the mayor of Albany.
Oh, the mayor of Albany. Okay.
So this
may be his collection of apples that he loved, and it may start producing apples in the beginning of the summer, and the last ones are being picked in November, and they are used from everything from drying to making applesauce to pies to storing to making cider.
Hmm.
Yeah, people of that class would often they'd have grafted trees sent to them from all over the world. They were, collectors or kind of museums for apples.
Right. All right. So,
there are many trees that they planted from the West Coast too. Not apple trees, but lots of other trees. So there's quite a variety. There's even a redwood there.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah, that was a thing back in the day.
All right. Well, who would he contact?
You can contact me.
No, I was asking who you could contact. Don't give your phone number over the air.
All right.
Well, maybe one of the best things to do is contact Cornell Extension.
Okay, that's a good start.
That would probably be a good place to do it. But my name's Alan Sachs, S-A-X, and
we can email you. If you email the show, voxpop@wamc.org, Dennis, we can get you in touch with Al, and maybe he can get you in touch with the right people, all right?
That'd be great. Are you A L L E N?
No, A L A N, the right way, as Alan Chartok likes to say.
And if you email us at voxpop@wamc.org, we will take care of putting you in touch with Al. Dennis, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. What's up, Steve?
Nothing. We're just trying to decide what we're tasting next here.
All right. So you guys, you can use hand signals and discuss that, and we'll go to the phones and go to Tim in Saratoga. Tim.
Hi, let me get on the real phone instead of the speaker.
Good, our engineer.
Can you hear me okay?
Zach, the engineer, appreciates that very much.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the call. I wanted to ask two questions and make a little plug for something. The two questions, I hope, are pretty simple. One of them is, what would the guys recommend for a home orchardist to get apple pressing equipment for grinding and pressing if you had maybe 10 to 20 trees? I haven't paid much attention to what new developments there might be in that area, so what would they recommend for that? And the second question is, when you're making cider, I see recipes that say sucrose or dextrose if you're going to add additional sugar to your cider. And I wonder if they have an opinion about sucrose versus dextrose.
First, the hardware. Anything?
For hardware, the technology for that, for basically a home-level operations, really hasn't changed in probably hundreds of years. You're talking a screw-type press, which basically has literally a screw. You presses down a plate into a basket, usually oftentimes all-in-one kind of deal that has a grinder built into it. You can get those all kinds of places. I know there's a place near me called Oesco, and they sell that kind of equipment. They're Orchard Supply in Conway,
Mass.
But that can be had. Okay. Yeah, that's easy to do. So as far as making hard cider, I would recommend, to begin with, don't use any sugar at all. The only reason to add more sugar to hard cider is to try to increase the alcohol level.
Right.
So if you want to just try to get a good understanding of how your apples, your apple varieties are going to ferment out, take each one of them, ferment them individually, like in a, say, 1 gallon or half gallon glass jug. Understand what those component parts are for each of your varieties, and then start playing with blends.
Any danger that glass jug will explode?
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to know a little bit. There's some equipment you need, like, say, an airlock, which is basically a little bubbler that goes on the top of a jug like that. You can get it at any kind of home brew supply store.
Okay.
And that lets the gas out, but not the air in.
Gotcha. All right, Tim, thanks for the call. What have we here, Steve?
So this is an eau de vie. And so an eau de vie is what we call a fresh apple brandy.
Wow.
So it's pretty common.
It's very pungent. You get apple right away in the nose.
So the thing with this is we basically take a hard cider, and then we run it through the still. You can see it's clear.
Yep.
So it comes off the still, and we basically almost immediately bottle it. We blend it down to drinking strength. This is about 40% alcohol.
Yeah.
So 80 proof.
All right, here we go.
And then we try it out. So what you get with an eau de vie is you get that fruitiness from the apples themselves. The alcohol tends to be a little bit brighter. The highs and lows on it are a little more apparent, so a little more bite. But it has an amazing kind of freshness and fruitiness to it.
Yeah, it's way better than White Lightning or Moonshine.
Way better.
Because you get the apple and there's some sweetness there. This is actually delicious.
Yeah, brandy is really unique like that. So unlike a lot of grain distillations, this is all distilled twice. So we run it through the still twice to clean it up.
Yeah.
And with fruit brandy, so any kind of fruit juice that you're going to be distilling, that's all you have to do to kind of leave that fruitiness in there.
My God, I love that. And that's something that you make over at the distillery?
Yeah, so we're a licensed distiller. We finally got around to getting our distilling license a little over a year ago, so we're just starting to lay some of this stuff down now.
Tremendous. I mean, that is a really tasty thing. Now, what if you left that in a barrel?
So what? Well, if you do that, you get what we're going to be trying next right here.
Ah,
so this...
What a great seg, as we say in the biz.
So this here is what we just call our straight-up apple brandy.
Okay,
and so this has been aged 1 year, because that's how long we've had our distilling license. So hope in the future to be able to kind of lay some of this down and get 2-3 years, kind of getting more towards that Calvados aging, which
now
is
you
the
got
French
a rounder,
apple brandy.
You got a rounder aroma to it.
You're getting that oakiness, vanilla, some of the spiciness from the white oak barrels.
Wow. It has a maturity to it. It's nice.
Last year, around this time, I was in Normandy, France, and I was on a cider tour. Rio Windcaller runs a lot of different cider tours, but we were in Normandy, and we were drinking Calvados all over Normandy, and up to 45-year-old Calvados. And it's amazing how different it is and how it changes over
time. But it doesn't
age
in the bottle. It has to be in the barrel.
Oh, no. It's got to be in the barrel.
Has to be in the barrel.
You do good work.
And
Steve,
so,
that's good stuff.
You.
Really?
And so the thing is that, you know, when you're making something like this, Steve's going to have to continue to put more of the brandy into the barrel because the angel share will be evaporating out of these barrels.
Okay. Right. Can you... do like they talk about with the whiskey, squeeze out the devil's cut out of the wood?
I don't think so.
Sit there and chew on pieces of wood. Yes, after you take the barrel apart.
All right, let's take another call here before we wrap it up. Let's go to Martin in Claremont, New York. Martin, you're on.
Martin. Hey, guys, I heard apples, and I was just like, okay, I got to call these guys. I don't even know who you are.
Okay.
I didn't catch your name.
Well, there's Al Sachs, and there's Steve Gudgeon.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so I make cider. I own Abandoned Hard Cider in Claremont, New York, also in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley. And we forage for a lot of our apples in the Catskills. And my question is, where are you located, and do you guys have as many wild apples as we do? Because there's literally millions, and okay. Some of them are so good for cider.
Right. Now, you've missed Thank the you. Beginning of the show. Thanks a yeah. lot. We talked quite a bit about wild apples. I had no idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Catskills is rotten with live apples, but I have a T-shirt that I made.
Not
up.
Rotten.
Not
it's
rotten.
Wonderful.
It's full of it. It's full of them.
It's beautiful wild apples.
It's an
beautiful
abundance. It's a cornucopia right. of wild yes. apples. But I have a T-shirt that I made up because I hunt wild apples in the Quabbin area, which is a big reservoir in our area.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, once you start looking for apples, you see them everywhere
yeah.
because they are all over the place. Now, some places are better than others. The Catskills, all through upstate New York, very good. Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts. There are apple resources that are throughout that, all down the Appalachians. You know, it's like a
Like sea caucus wouldn't be so good down in New Jersey.
Well, I think anywhere they apples were grown.
Yeah.
You can find apples.
Okay.
Or people eat exactly. apples because you throw a core out the window, there's potentially a new apple tree. Right.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly.
So, and different some years are better than others. This was a really good on apple year.
Yep.
Weather extremes weren't too bad. Last year we had about 10% of a crop because of all the rain we had,
yeah.
like 30 inches of rain. Terrible year. This year, balanced back out. All the wild trees are on everywhere.
Fantastic. So. All right, listen, we only have about 30 seconds here. This has been a fun hour. Al Sachs, quickly give us the where's and what for's of the Cider Days.
Okay. If you're interested, Franklin County Cider Days is the first through the 3rd of November. That's right after Halloween. Look up ciderdays.org. That's ciderdays.org.
Beautiful.
You'll see the full schedule there, and we would welcome you to come out and hang out with
All
us.
All right, Steve Gudgeon, how do people find out about Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery?
BearSwampOrchard.com, and we have lots of talks going on Cider Days weekend. We're going to talk about small farm distilling and growing organic apples, and I got a little dessert for you here.
All right.
This is called a pomo, which is a combination of fresh apple cider and apple brandy.
Oh.
50-50,
oh
then you
gosh.
Age it for about a year.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, we do another hour on this. All
yes.
right, we're done, though. Thank you both for being here. Support comes from Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, serving contemporary American cuisine and craft cocktails, located in the Hudson Valley's Orchard at Wine Country at Buttermilk Falls Inn and Spa, buttermilkfallsinn.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. And Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing products from classic to new labels, spirithaus.com. Thanks again to Al Sachs of Franklin County Cider Days and Steve Gudgeon of Bear Swamp Orchard and Cidery for being here. Great calls. Sorry if we left you on the line today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Joe Makowitz making a rare Friday appearance on the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Don't forget the fun drive, 6 a.m. Monday. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.